Welcome aboard the Shipshape Podcast, your ultimate destination for marine wisdom and expertise. Our skilled crew, comprised of top boating journalists and experts, is committed to delivering informative and captivating content week after week. We're eager to connect with and learn from our fellow mariners, and we encourage you to share our podcast with your friends. Remember, word of mouth is our lifeblood. And if you enjoy an episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. By doing so, you're helping us forge a robust community of mariners who can learn, collaborate, and exchange their experiences out on the water.
Today on the Shipshape Podcast, we are talking to Joseph Visconti, the driving force behind some of the most forward-thinking companies in the boating world today. As the leader of Twin V Powercats, Orza X1, and the newly acquired Aquasport boats, Joseph has been instrumental in propelling these companies onto the world stage and onto the NASDAQ. In this episode, we'll be talking about everything from leadership and innovation to the future of electric boating. We'll discuss the challenges and triumphs of going public on the NASDAQ, the ins and outs of the electric boat industry, and how these companies are contributing to the future of recreational and sustainable boating. Your two co-hosts today are Meryl Schrett. I'm a liveaboard on a Tasheng Toshiba 36 in Boston, Massachusetts, and T.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. Talabhati here, and today we're talking to Joseph and his experience in the marine world and all the exciting things he's been up to. So welcome to the show, Joseph.
Wow, that was quite an introduction. Thank you so much.
So Joseph, where are you recording this from?
So I live in Juno Beach, and our Twin V factory is in Fort Pierce, Florida. I'm currently in Juno Beach.
Nice. So you guys getting rained on as well?
Not yet. It's beautiful here.
Yeah. Okay. Virginia's lots of rain today.
Before the show, you had mentioned that you had only been in the industry for a relatively short period of time. So what exactly were you doing before? Did you grow up boating? What made the shift?
Yeah, so I've always been a recreational weekend warrior boater, you know, love the outdoors, love the water. And I was living in Port St. Lucie. I was doing a real estate transaction kind of post-financial crisis. And before that, I was an investment banker for 20 years, taking companies public. So while I was doing the real estate, you know, about 8-9 years ago, a friend approached me and said he found this boat company and he wanted some help raising some money. And he wanted me to go take a look at it with him. So I went down. You know, I've never been in a manufacturing plant, let alone a boat manufacturing plant. I walked in, there was just a ton of energy. It was really something I've never seen. And, you know, as an American, you always think that there's manufacturing overseas. But, you know, there are some companies here in the country that are building quality products by hand. Twin V on paper, you know, was making money, but, you know, walking around just looked like a very disorganized, not well-run business. But it had some really good people within the company. They had this incredible product. I got on one of the Twin Vs, and, you know, a multi-hull boat is just a totally different ride quality and ride performance than a monohull. And it was kind of lightning in the bottle when I first experienced the Twin V ride. And, you know, long story short, I agreed to be partners with him. He was going to be the leader, you know, kind of the main boat guy. I didn't really have the background or experience. And the day we were going to close, you know, the lawyers were in, the documents were all on the table. You know how they set the pens and paper and the documents and they tab all the signature pages? He says, come on out here in the hallway. I need to talk to you. I said, come on, we got to get inside. We got to close this deal. And he said, no, I got to talk to you first. I can't go forward with it. So
what?
That's a little late in the day.
True story. So I went in, talked to the selling owner and said, listen, I'm going to close, but I need 6 months to pay this off. And Roger was a good guy, and we worked out the terms, and I bought Twin V with no background, no experience. Luckily, I mean, my head was spinning for 3 years. Luckily, there was two main people in there, Preston Yarborough and Lolly Ball. Preston was there for 20 years. Lolly was there for, you know, 7-8 years, but they both had you know, they were running the business operationally. And, you know, without them, we wouldn't be where we are today. And they're still with me. So it's been quite a ride. That was 8 years ago.
Nice. And why PowerCats? It was just totally your friend who, his idea, everything.
Yeah, totally. You know, he could have walked me into a bicycle factory. It was something totally different and unique. I mean, I had a Sea Ray and he was buying Twin Vs and selling them at the Port St. Lucie marina down there. He had a dealership.
So obviously you get into the boat business out of nowhere. And what was that experience like?
So everything from learning composites to manufacturing. And by the way, Twin V at that time, the owner wasn't pumping any money into the company. So there was no lights in the lamination departments. They had no cranes. The forklifts had like missing wheels. You know, they were using open barrels of like resin to kind of put parts on. It was just absolutely, I mean, Preston was running it to the best he could, but the owner wouldn't put any money in. So they had no new equipment, very bad lighting, low quality. But the fact that they had the great riding platform, the Twin V platform, and it was a very utilitarian kind of DIY boat, low cost, easy, you know, entry, cater, you know, they would sell 50 boats a year. And there was a market for these very basic, great riding boats that, you know, it had like one cushion on them. They were only white. 6 rod holders, you know, there wasn't a lot of great fit and finish, but sometimes people want like a Carolina skiff type business model.
Keeping it simple. Interesting. So how long were you with Twin V, and then when does Forza X1 happen? How does that happen?
So Preston and I made a decision to retool the entire Twin V line. So I started pumping money into the company, hired marine architects, naval engineers, and Preston's a designer also. And we set out to design a whole new line of boats. So we were slowly kind of bringing these old kind of Twin V models out and integrating in a whole new line of boats. That the old Twin V classic boats had rolled gunnels. They would build a hull, put down plywood, spray chop on it, and put a cap ring on it. And that was the boat. They did not have liners.
Okay, as boat owners, we understand what you're saying. Some of our listeners though are new to this, so explain how scary that is.
So it's not scary. It's a great kind of a garage DIY boat. I mean, boats, a lot of modern products have marine grade plywood in them. And so it's not scary. It's just a very basic type of boat. It's not scalable. If you wanted to build 300 boats, it would be nearly impossible because they used to put the plywood as stringers, as bulkheads within the hulls, and they would have to tab in, you know, every single bulkhead. It would have to be cut with like a jigsaw. It's just very time consuming. Today we have CNC machines and everything is kitted.
Boom, boom, boom. You're just belting them out now, right? And is the output increased? They were originally 50 boats a year. How are you guys hitting it now?
So we did 240 boats in 2022, and that included bringing 4 new models into the model line. It included launching an electric boat company. It included taking 2 companies public and included bringing a 40-foot, you know, 4 quad engine boat to the market. So 2022 was really a killer year for us.
I got to ask, so you come into Twin V and, you know, you've been working there or you kind of just show up. And how were you received by the people that kind of already work there? Like, how did you make that type of introduction?
That's a great question. So it was everything from the hook was in the mouth. Like, they knew that I knew nothing. So I would go walk around the factory. And if I didn't have, you know, Preston or some other manager to kind of confirm information, and I would ask one of the workers, like, what's going on here? You know, they would just take you, I called it like they would take you 30 feet into the mud and just tell you some story about the way it is. And this is how things are done. And so there's a massive learning process, you know, of understanding how boats are built, learning lean manufacturing, starting to put processes in place, quality control measures, learning all the EHS, which is environmental health and safety of a factory. It was head down 20-hour days, nonstop, you know, building the company. If you walked in there today from Twin V, there's a cafe in factory now. It's all beautifully lit. There's cranes. People walk in there, they say it's the cleanest factory they've ever seen. It's inviting. It's, you know, everyone's dressed with Twin V shirts on. It's organized. There's signs everywhere. There's safety equipment. It's a completely different, well-run, organized plant than it was 8 years ago.
So maybe give us some tips on that as well. How did you make that transition happen?
A lot of hard work, a lot of great people, you know, hiring. I mean, I think one of my strengths as a manager is finding good people. I never went to college, so I'm very visceral. You know, when you meet somebody and you know, hey, this is either a good person or a bad person, and you just have that kind of visceral feeling. You know, my hiring techniques are not data driven. It's kind of people driven. And I've been able to really bring an incredible team into the company. It's not perfect. It's not a straight line. But, you know, today we have 160 employees. We've got department heads, managers, HR departments. You know, we launched a whole electric line, Forza. I was lucky enough to get Jim LeFou. I work with him. He was the vice president of production over at Maverick Boat Group. They were building 1,700 boats a year. You know, Maverick, Pathfinder, Kobe and Hughes, and then Malibu bought Maverick. Jim retired, as he says, for 12 minutes, and I was banging on his door, begging him to come and work with us. And he came in and kind of looked at our technology on the electric side, and he agreed to be the president and CEO of Forza X1, and he's done an amazing job. And it's just, I've learned so much working with him. You know, he's an engineer. He's not like me. I'm very visceral. You know, he's an engineer. He's lean manufacturing. He's very data driven. He's a spreadsheet guy. So I think the two of us always, you know, arrive at the same decision, but our kind of processing is totally different. But it's great to work with him. He has incredible leadership skills. So not only is he leading the Forza electric boat, which we're almost into production, you know, he's helped tremendously on helping us. Like last year, we went from 120 units at Twin V to 240 units. And a lot of that was we started introducing lean manufacturing processes into the factory.
And what does that mean? Is that more like just-in-time type stuff? What is that?
It is. So lean was devised by the Toyota Group. It was Japanese-based. It was very efficient. It meant that, you know, single point flow. So it's a linear, you know, it originally started with Henry Ford. So think about, you know, Henry Ford and then put that on steroids where all of the parts would be brought to the boat. So a person that is working on a process would have the least amount of movement. All the tools would be placed in one area. All the parts would be brought for assembly, and just kind of think through how you build a boat in the most efficient fashion. So Twin V, before Jim, was building a boat in 30 days, and with Jim LeFou, we're building boats in less than 10 days. That's, and with the same amount of people.
Yeah, that's huge.
Huge.
Yep.
So I can imagine that, you know, the initial challenges with Twin V were education on your end. And by the time of Forza X1, you knew boating. What challenges have you faced with that?
So, you know, everything from the dealers, and when I bought the company, you know, there were some dealers that were allowed to sell boats from their house, believe it or not, you know, and they were still selling these little kind of, you know, 10-foot dinghies. And we had to transition all that. We had to go from dealers that could do anything and sell into each other's territories. And really, I mean, it was like drinking water out of a fire hose on every front, from learning manufacturing to raising money. I mean, I've raised over $50 million for the two companies over the past 2 years. You know, that money has gone into the plants, and, you know, we're building a brand new plant in North Carolina for Forza. We've modernized our plant for Pierce. We've acquired Aquasport. We've introduced 14 new models. We've engineered boats. We've had tooling. We've had products, you know, testing, prototyping. It's just been nonstop. I'm tired of thinking about it. I think I'm going to lay down for a little while.
So I definitely want to pick your brain more about the investing, but I think that might get its own little tangent. Tell us more, because you just touched on this. Tell us more about the distribution and the sales and some of the lessons you learned along there.
You know, I for some reason, I've always been very customer-centric. And I realized in this business that you make, especially we live in a world where everything is social and the microphone has gotten as big as someone's willing, the time they're willing to spend online. So that customer is absolutely the priority. And the dealers are not technically owned by Twin V. So a dealer is an independent business that might represent multiple lines. So yes, you want that dealer to represent your boats and your brand a certain way, but that dealer owner is doing business the way they want to do it. So sometimes those business, they align with each other and that becomes a true partnership between a manufacturer and a dealer. And other times they don't align. So, you know, we've had a kind of like turn over dealers and find dealers that believed in the same customer centric philosophies that we believe in. We recently, you know, moved many territories over to OneWater Marine. But that was a very, very tough call for us because there were some great dealers within our territories in Florida that, you know, we had to say goodbye to. And it was just a heartbreaking situation because OneWater, you know, they're not the type of company that would just take, join you and say, here's one territory. You know, they're willing to come in and give a 150 boat order, you know, but they want enough room to like generate revenues. I mean, they're in business to sell boats and support customers. So, you know, that transition was a tough transition for us, but it's working. And OneWater is a great partner. So OneWater not only became the largest non-affiliated shareholder in Forza X1, they invested $2 million on our IPO for Forza X1. They're our largest buyer of Twin Vs. And we also signed an agreement with them that they just gave us a 100 boat, $12 million order for our electric boats. So OneWater continues to be a partner with us.
Ahoy, investors. Are you on the lookout for a unique opportunity to invest in a thriving industry? Set your sights on Shipshape, the innovative platform connecting boat and yacht owners with top-notch marine service providers. Our team is committed to revolutionizing the marine repair and refit market in North America. But we can't sail these seas alone. With your support, we can enhance our platform and create a significant impact in the industry. Don't let this exciting investment opportunity drift away. Contact us today to learn more about joining our voyage. Reach out to us at info@shipshape.pro.
You had mentioned that, you know, part of where your leadership really came in was finding the right people to hire. And, you know, we've certainly heard that a lot in these interviews, finding the right people. So could you give us some tips on how exactly, besides the gut feeling, you know, what makes a good, you know, employee?
What qualities are you looking for?
So, I mean, I'm a workaholic. You know, workaholic sounds like a negative word, but 5 years ago, I used to say these things like, I have no life. I work all the time. But on the other hand, I was thinking about it one day and I said, you know what? My life is work and I'm not in a coal mine. I get to work with amazing people. We are inventing new products. We're, you know, using technology, creating innovation. You know, we are employing people. We are giving health insurance to people that never had the opportunity. We have profit sharing in our company. And I did something that I'm really proud of that no other company did that I know of. And it was not easy. Once we went public with Twin V, I wanted our employees to become owners of the company. And you can't believe not only the laws, the rules, the tax laws, and the challenges of giving an employee, a non-affiliated employee, like public company stock. So I had to go to a lawyer group and have them create an entire document to transfer these shares. And you have to treat all employees equal. If you're going to give stock to one employee, you got to have a set of standards that's equal and fair for all employees. And there's a lot of rules on taxes, on whether you give an employee something, whether they're taxed or not taxed, you know, how long they vest. I mean, it took a year and a half to be able to create a incentive stock option plan for our employees. And I'm proud that we were able to get that accomplished. So you asked me like the type of people I'm looking for. I want people that work hard, that I say bleed Twin V blood. Okay. And I mean that people are really passionate about what we do. It's almost like a sickness between some of the executives, like our CFO, Carrie Gunnarsson, Jim Lefeu, Lolly, Preston. It's almost like this sick competition, like who emails each other first at night, and it starts at like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. That's like hilarious. I got up first, you know, and I emailed you, and then, I mean, it's probably a really unhealthy concept.
It's not for everyone.
But I don't think we would accomplish what we've set out and accomplished if, you know, we weren't like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, but you use a really interesting word there. So what do you do to drive innovation then? How does that work?
Engineers, you know, engineers are the new artists. You know, Steve Jobs used to say the engineers he were hiring were the Picassos and the Rembrandts of today. And so, you know, it started off with Dan Norton, who's our lead chief engineer at Forza. And I called him 3 years ago. I said, Dan, you know, I wanted to create this electric engine, but I need to raise some money. Can you design like a picture of an outboard motor for me? It doesn't need to work right now. I just need kind of a picture of it because I'm raising money. And 3 years later, that motor works and we have it on the back of boats. But, you know, he was at a robotics company for 19 years. He initially did this on the side, not knowing if I was like a crazy person or not. And today we have a great team of engineers. Like I said, Jim's the leader of that group, but we've got electric boats on the water. We just got an order from OneWater. We're building a new factory in North Carolina. We're fully funded. We raised, you know, almost $25 million for the company. So, you know, I think by Q4 of 2023, we're going to have electric boats on the water.
Sweet. But okay. I want to dig deeper into innovation, by the way. Is it like the sort of 3M Google type innovation where all employees get to spend 10-20% of their time working on new stuff, or is it just you coming up with the new ideas? Like, what are you guys doing?
So on the Forza side, I will tell you that the first electric boat we built blew up and we had to jump in the water. And you can go online and Google, you know, Twin V electric boat. The crazy thing was when it caught on fire, there happened to be, like, I was stupid enough that I put Twin V on the side of it. I was so proud that we had an electric boat and just that it was going to work. We made it all nice, put a lot of upholstery in it, put Twin V on the side. And so when it caught on fire, we did have a chase boat. So we were smart enough to bring a boat that many of us got onto the chase boat. Preston had a jump in the water.
Wasn't electric. Yeah.
It was electric. The chase boat was
not. Okay.
So the innovation thing is like trial and error. Like today we have an electric boat that works. It was not a straight line. There are many times that we're, you know, are the engineers are working on systems and the electric motor. We'd bring the boat down to the dock and it like the shaft would snap and you're just disheartened. And because that shaft had to be ordered from some, you know, manufacturer, and it was kind of like during COVID and everything was backed up, you have to wait like another 3 weeks to get, you know, another shaft. And so specifically on the innovation side, you know, our goal has been to create a family friendly, safe, usable, affordable, mass produced electric boat that really catered to this core kind of 22 to 26 foot family market. And I think we have a product now that we can go to market with.
What are the key factors that you believe really inspire the adoption of sustainable recreational boating?
That's a great question. You know, of course, the one thing that really moved me was seeing the oil in the marinas. You know, we've all seen it. You're there and it's just like dead water. And we feed our children like out of these waters. Like I surf, my son surfs. You know, you're out in the ocean and the waters on certain days are just not green. And so I think there's definitely a movement to kind of, you know, clean the ecosystem up. But on top of that, you've got the efficiencies that are starting to take shape. Number one is that I have a Tesla. For 3 years, I have not, knock on wood, had any maintenance. Electric motors have 90% less moving parts. I understand those are the talking points and those are the data points, but it's true. You know, my Tesla gets all the services done through an update and a cell phone, and it's software updates. There's no oil that's being put into these cars. There's no spark plugs. So on the service side, we're going to see, you know, service challenges kind of like come down, the efficiency of electrification. By the way, the charging system for marine, people don't know this, but the infrastructure like is already there. Like, yep. You know, you've got shore power in every marina and almost every dock across the country. So you need to hook up $500, you know, 20 amp service up to that shore power. And we have our charging infrastructure for electric boats.
So that's super cool. So you highlighted some of the pros. Tell us some of the obstacles you might have faced in this electrification mission.
So the challenges is the battery, the demand for batteries because of the automotive transition is very, very, very tough. And there's different battery chemistries that range from, you know, LFP, which kind of considered a safer chemistry versus, you know, MCI, which is more combustible and challenging that some of the fires have taken place. Torqueedo and a battery manufacturer, one, had an announcement 2 days ago that an LFP battery is going into production specifically for marine. So we were on the phone with one today, which is a great company up in Novi, Michigan. I was there last year with Jim Lefeu visiting them. They just opened their new facility. So I think, you know, hopefully we can start working with them. But I think batteries ultimately will become commoditized. That's my belief. Some of the other negatives is the big question, you know, is range anxiety. But there was a study done with boat clubs, and the average boat club is 9 miles and 2.5 hours of runtime. So you are not going to take electric boats 100 miles offshore. We're not there yet, but for day boats, weekend warriors, sandbars, pulling your kids around, you know, 2 to 5 hours of, I'm talking runtime, because you may be out 8 hours, but you're only running the boat like 2 or 3, 4 hours.
Mm-hmm. The kids will be like, are we there yet anyway by that point?
Yeah. Marine electrification works for weekend family friendly outings, you know, and spending time probably initially, you know, with fresh water and lakes, but you're just not going to go 100 miles offshore. You're not going to go 100 miles an hour. You know, it's not go fast boats unless you want to use the thing for 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but they do like going fast. I was remembering Boston Harbor. Like, you see all these, you know, center consoles, essentially, and they're just blasting around the whole day, just from one island to sandbar to back. Oh, let's go pick up drinks. Blah, 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 and then, yeah, and then that's it. But so just coming back to your battery thing, are you sort of going, perhaps in the future, going down the Tesla road and just making your own batteries?
We are. We believe that ultimately you have to bring that value stream internally. So we're building this factory in Marion County, North Carolina. We did a great incentive deal with the state of North Carolina. There was a huge tobacco settlement called Golden Leaf in North Carolina years ago. And so North Carolina has a lot of money to bring jobs to the state. You know, we initially wanted to work with Florida, but we couldn't match the incentives that North Carolina was giving us. And we found this really cool town that's got a freshwater lake in front of us. So we can test the boats, and there's like some mountain biking trails. I also mountain bike. I mean, it was just kind of a really cool, hip area to build an electric boat factory. But to answer your question, I mean, the ultimate goal is to bring everything in-house, and you will never be able to scale manufacturing unless you're doing everything yourself. Because if you have to wait on a supplier, there's challenges with that. It may work for a certain period of time, but there's hiccups. The more you can bring in-house, the more efficient you'll be.
How we had set up this interview was that we had been talking with Eddie Dennison. And, you know, I had posed to him, I was like, well, really, how do you see kind of electric engines going? Because it seems like every single day there's a new electric engine company coming out. So where do you think that electric is headed? Will there be a few key players and the rest kind of die out? Or
I'm not a zero sum, you know, business guy. Like, I think like rising tides, the more players that enter the market, the better. In 2022, there was about 380,000 recreational, you know, units sold in this country. I think it's down 20% now with the headwinds, but there's enough for everybody. I mean, our goal over the next 5 years is to be at 1,000 units annually on the electric side. There's still a lot. I will tell you that today there's probably 20 electric boat companies, and they're all doing some interesting stuff, but I don't see a single company that has created a fully integrated, affordable electric boat. And by that, I mean fiberglass boat that looks like a boat. Because there's some boats that kind of come up out of the water, hydrofoil. There's these weird things, and everyone's doing some unique things. But our goal has always been, you know, the Tesla model that Elon's a genius. To sell these cars, we got to look like a car, act like a car, have same behavioral patterns as a car, be priced like a car. And that's how you're going to adopt consumers. You can't adopt, you know, early adopters if you got a weird looking electric thing. Like, you might get some people, but the masses are not going to like buy into that unless they can compare apples and apples. We did that. We went to Garmin and got a partnership. We got an app that's got integration. Our boats will be priced like its gas counterpart. It's going to be fiberglass. You have a trailer. It's going to look just like its gas counterpart.
So when you talk about affordability, I'd love to kind of hear a little bit more of that. I will say I went to one boat show once, and it was this electric boat company that we all know about. And they're like, oh yeah, like cork deck and everything's like recycled. But, and I look at the price tag, I was like, whoa, you know, that's unbelievable. So what does affordability really mean?
I get that. So I know the company you're talking about, great company, good product, good people. But affordability for us is that, you know, you can go buy a 22-foot single engine boat, whether it's a Sportsman or a Cobia or a Sailfish, and you could buy that boat from 90 grand to 120 grand. And you can get a 22, 24-foot Boston Whaler, could be upwards of $200,000. Yep. So our goal is to bring a 22-foot fiberglass center console boat with a Garmin screen, 150, 180 horsepower equivalent motor, 3 to 5 hours of runtime, good fit and finish, a live well, for $120,000. That's a good quality entry-level boat, family-friendly, affordable, and has the same kind of user characteristics as its gas counterpart.
Mm-hmm. And previously, you'd mentioned for Twin V is that they were more sort of almost on the DIY side. How much of that do you retain on the electric side with Forza?
So the Forza model is going to be fully integrated. There's not much to do to the boat. You know, it's one thing to go into a 12-volt system and kind of tinker with it and add your electronics. And, you know, if you get shocked, you know, it's like, oh, but if you get shocked with a 400-volt system, you know, you're... arms are going to fall off.
Yeah, that's going to hurt a lot. So stay away from the DIY bit. Okay.
Yeah, the electric boats are not DIY.
Mm. You know, like obviously electric boats that have been, you know, mentioned here, it's still very much in the infancy and there's range anxiety. Obviously the batteries are starting to get squared away. What other key changes do you think need to happen to the larger industry to make it more widely adopted?
They've got to be safe. You know, I think there's some questions, like I said earlier, around battery chemistries. You know, there's still Tesla challenges. Like, there was a flood, you know, several months back with a hurricane and some of the batteries were imploding. So I think, you know, you're 20 miles offshore, 5 miles, you know, a mother standing in a showroom, and unless she knows that that boat is 100% safe, she's not going to put her children on it. So I think until that confidence factor is there, either through tests or guarantees, you know, or education, there will be this adoption challenge. So LFP technology is a chemistry that the ABYC has started to really kind of position itself. The ABYC is American Boat Builders Yacht Association. So if you listen to, you know, their podcasts and where they're heading, they're really kind of positioning that LFP is the battery chemistry that we want to adopt for marine electrification.
What about some of the hype around like graphene batteries?
I'm not too familiar with those.
Hmm.
So you've brought some companies on the NASDAQ. Now, what was the thinking behind that? How does that even work, you know, in the boating world?
Yeah, so that's my background. That's what I was doing from a very young age. I was a stockbroker when I was 24 years old, and then I started my own brokerage firm. And so that was my early career. So I had the experience on the other side of the desk of financing companies and helping companies raise capital. So when I bought Twin V, in the back of my mind, I always wanted a business that I could take public and have the opportunity to raise capital, build, acquire, grow a business. that was always very exciting for me. So as we started to scale Twin V and got to a point that, you know, we were hitting numbers and had good solid growth. You know, I have a good friend who owns an investment bank in New York, Think Equity, who's one of the best investment bankers. They take, you know, 200 companies public a year. And, you know, we were always talking. He was always telling me early, you need to take Twin V public. I said, we're not big enough. Come on. And so I think one day just a light bulb went off and, you know, we went and we did the audit. We got all the documentation. We filed all the filings and went out and did the raise. And you know, lo and behold, I think, you know, again, a great partnership between an investment bank and your auditors and lawyers, putting a great team together, working in sync. You know, we had great success. And then 6 months later, the electric started taking shape and the EV stock market was kind of going wild a little bit. And he called me, my friend, the banker, and said, you need to spin Forza out and raise capital. Not only will you relieve, if there's a burn rate going on, you're in pre-revenue, so you're burning cash on Twin V. If you take Forza public, you'll stop the bleed on the Twin V side and you'll capitalize Forza and you'll have two public companies. I'm like, is that even legal? Can you do that? And he's like, let's do it. So I went into my CFO's office, Carrie, and I said, we're going to spin out Forza and take it public. And I think she threw something at me. This is a lot of work. I mean, the audits and the accounting and everything. And I don't remember if she hit me with the stapler or not. Maybe she just hit the wall.
Yeah, you ducked. Yeah. but so dig a little deeper into that. Like you said, we weren't big enough. When are you big enough? And like maybe some other advice for somebody who has a marine company and they've been dreaming about, you know, taking their own company public. What are some advice and tips that you could give them?
You know, this is a question because I was taking small micro cap and small cap companies public for many years. And it's a great question I could talk about for hours because Forza 2 weeks ago, no revenue, burning cash. We have a product that we're bringing to the market, but it hasn't gone to market yet. And it traded on a Monday, traded 102 million shares. It traded 102 million shares. To put that in context, Apple Computer that same day only traded 130 million shares. And Forza traded 102 million shares. And so why does a small little kind of startup electrification marine company trade almost as many shares as Apple?
It's the biggest company in the world. Yeah.
And then on the other side, you got Twin V that we have been growing year over year over year. We grew 100% last year and we went from, you know, 120 units to 240 units. Our revenues were up 100%. We're profitable. Some days the stock doesn't trade. Why does like a little tiny, you know, startup trade wild in a good, solid, healthy boat building business? Other days doesn't. So
is it right place, right time? What is it?
You know, I think it's like tech is exciting and the possibility, you know, the Elon Musk factor, like Tesla stock went crazy. So I think if you go look at YouTube videos, I was shocked. I put Forza X1 into YouTube the other day. And there were like 50 videos that were these kind of stock analysts did about the Forza. Like our Forza promotional videos don't even come up on YouTube anymore because these stock guys are like talking so much about the company, but it's good.
So here's some advice. So somebody who wants to take their public company, well, just do it.
I think you should do it. It's the American dream. I think it's expensive, but there's some great banks that focus on small, healthy companies with great technology or visionary companies. And if you got the know-how to do it, you can get the capital. I mean, Wall Street, there's a lot of money there. So the small amount of money, when we're talking 50 million, yeah, I raised 50 million. That's a lot of money. But on Wall Street standards, like I think those guys might spend that on like, you know, going out to dinner or a piece of artwork or something. So a public company will create far more wealth and value for its employees, its shareholders and stakeholders than a private company. A private company sometimes sells at 2 and 3 times earnings if it's sold. a public company could trade at 20, 30, 40 times earnings. So that's not always the case. Some public, like right now, markets are depressed. You know, there's some good boat building companies that are trading at 3 PE ratios, price earnings ratios. But, you know, during good times, like stocks trade at exponential values.
As we kind of shift back towards the electric boating in the future, where do you see the industry going over the next 10 years? Obviously, there's conversations about trying to get more electric and get rid of the fossil fuel burning boats. But what do you think is going to happen?
I think we're all going to be flying around in drones.
Woo! And then it just lands on the ocean where it needs to. Yeah.
I think people who are working less, the next generation is like, doesn't really want to work that much. The generation, I have a 21-year-old son, they're into enjoying life. They're into experiences. They don't want to own anything, you know? So I think, this boat clubs, we sell a lot of boats right now to boat clubs. Like I see that as kind of a growing segment of the industry, maybe even boat sharing. I know there's a couple of apps out there. People are sharing boats that could grow. You know, I personally like owning something and taking care of it. Like when I grew up, my father would take us boating for an hour and then he would spend 3 hours kind of washing and waxing.
Washing it down.
You know, right?
Yeah, you're saying that's gone. Leave it to the boat club guys.
I'm almost 60. Like I enjoy that. It's something to do. Like on the weekends, you're working, you know, you're stressed and it's kind of like it's almost kind of meditative. Like
I totally agree. Yeah. So, but we didn't get to touch on Aquasport, right? That's a new acquisition. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's in Tennessee. That's our third plant. Jim LaFue's there right now, ramping it up. We're hiring, I think there's like 20 employees. And, you know, it's a 40-year-old brand. Even though Twin V grew 100% last year, catamarans represent like 6% of the market share. So monohulls are still a huge part of the market. So we were always looking for kind of another addition as a public company. We've got to grow. We've got to provide value to our shareholders. So let me back up for a second. So we started a small brand, a little monohull 22 called LFG. I don't know if the website's still up, lfgmarine.com. And we got with Freedom Boat Club. They gave us a big order. If you can build 22-foot center consoles for us. So our genius designer, Greg McLogan, designed this gorgeous 22-foot center console. And we got an order from Freedom, started building them under the LFG brand. And so this kind of monohull business took off. So when Aquasport presented itself, we're like, oh, we're building 22-foot monohulls. We could go buy Aquasport. They got all the molds, they got a building, they got a facility, and you know, we could turn our LFG into Aquasport, add a second brand to the Twin V, and we could add scale, you know, as a public company. So we're kind of in that process right now.
So you hit the ground running there.
We're trying to. The facility's huge. It's 150,000 square feet.
Ooh.
And it's not kind of in a straight line. It's multiple buildings. If you look at it from Google Earth, it was a patchwork of buildings with different ceiling heights, but the molds were in great shape. The previous owners did a lot of tooling and mold building. So from that perspective, we got 7 new models that we're bringing to the market and we're going to launch with, putting a lot of the dealer network back together, putting the band back together. Our sales lead, Al Lewis, brought on 2 dealer reps, Jay and Bob. So I think we added like, you know, 10 dealers so far, starting to put, you know, orders together. Yeah, it's been busy.
And you've obviously learned a bunch of efficiencies along the way that you can, you know, use over here, right?
We have. So, you know, we're looking for a, you know, kind of a president of operations or someone to be boots on the ground at the Aquasport. So if anyone's listening that wants a high paying job, you know, with long hours and a lot of responsibility to run a boat manufacturing facility in White Bluff, Tennessee, this is a shout out.
Too funny. Okay. And then I was also wondering, like, I know some of the bigger manufacturers, you know, the Yamaha types, they've literally, I saw this on YouTube, they've literally sort of signed deals with some of the boatyards saying that you can't put any of our new stuff into older boats. How do you feel about your technology and it going into some of the older boats and just giving them a new lease on life?
You talking about the Forza electric outboard?
Yeah, yep.
So you asked me what are some of the negatives with electrification. That's challenging to take a existing boat and retrofit it because you'd have to cut the tanks out and drop the batteries in, and it's a totally different wiring system versus a 12 volt system to a 400 volt system. And so you essentially would have to like rebuild the entire boat. You do see kind of on the smaller horsepower, like Mercury came out with a little 7 horsepower that you can carry the battery and just hook the motor on. It, mm-hmm. It works,
type.
But when you're talking high powered motors, like 150 horsepower, it really only works if you integrate and you're building that electric boat from the ground up. I mean, it can be done, but you wouldn't want to be in production and do it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Is it really interesting?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was wondering why Yamaha had made those deals. So I guess that might be why, is that you just need to rebuild the boat. Why bother?
Yeah, that's why all those companies have those battery packs they can carry, because it doesn't work to put the battery below the hull.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As we come to our conclusion here, could you tell us where people can find your products and read more about what you guys are doing?
Sure. So, our main company is Twin V, twinv.com, and our electric company, Forza X1, Numeric 1. ForzaX1.com and AquasportBoats.com. So I want to thank everyone today. You guys are great, by the way. I usually don't talk this much, but you asked me questions that I think about all the time, but nobody ever asks me. So thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing your knowledge, because like we've been talking about, the marine industry is really hush hush. So I'm glad we're getting all this good info out there. Thank you so much for sharing it.
Yeah, you guys are on to something, man. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Joseph. Really good having you on the show. Really appreciate it.
All right, guys. All right, bye.
Check back every Tuesday for our latest episode. And be sure to like, share, and subscribe to ShipShape.pro.